you know, having a, I think just down to basics of having a really clear, compelling pitch for what you're doing and why you're doing it and how it's going to add value to the ecosystem for investors, for customers, et cetera. And having those, having like your pitch really strong. We look at a lot of pitches. It's amazing to me how some of them are so far, far above others. So I think that all that's important.
Welcome back to Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today I'm chatting with Kelly Callahan, a crypto trailblazer from Arrington Capital who cut her teeth at Algorand and now fuels the next wave of digital asset innovation. We're diving into her crash course in crypto, from decoding complex white papers to backing DeFi and AI-driven projects, plus her role in the Celsius bankruptcy bid. Kelly also shares what makes a killer pitch and why Boston Blockchain Week is the place to catch everyone's crypto pulse. So check out Arrington Capital at arringtoncapital.com and follow them at Arrington Capital on Twitter. Grab your passes for the talks, pitch fest, crypto vibes at bostonblockchainweek.com. Now let's jump in with Kelly Callahan.
Kelly, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Kyle. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. Oh, no, I was just commenting on your shirt. I love the logo you have on there.
Yeah, I like our Arrington swag. I've been meaning to do more blue with our dot.
If you ever get a hat, let me know.
I will do that. Do a new order soon.
So you are with Arrington Capital, correct?
That is correct.
You also told me, too, that you spent some time at Algorand, and that's kind of how you got into the space. So I don't know if we want to kind of start maybe there with kind of how you got into it.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, because we're in light of upcoming Boston Blockchain Week, I think it's worth pausing and talking about Boston for a few minutes.
We can do that too.
But well, my whole career has been here in Boston. I've always worked for tech companies here out of Boston with footprints and customers all over the world. So it's, you know, been a privilege and an honor. I've worked for startups in and out of crypto here in town. Silvio McCauley was doing Algorand back in 2017-18 and needed sort of a growth person, someone that could bring it to market and sort of help with the community and social and all of that. And so it was very early. They had a little tiny, they were squatting in some office space on Boylston Street in a very small office. There were probably like 6 to 12 of us. And then it got very, very crowded very quickly after that, but joined before the project went live, before it went to mainnet. And so was really involved in all that. That was back in the day when there wasn't the abundance of information that there is today about the basics of blockchain and decentralization and why that might be important. And so my career not being I don't have a background in economics, math, or computer science. And I was, you know, handed Silvio's 72-page white paper, which is entirely math and economics. And you had no other choice. I had no other choice but to dive in and really figure it out. And it was a blast. It was super fun. But that was a different time.
Were you into it like immediately, or did you have to like kind of like warm up to it, like as you were reading it and like getting more excited about the potential?
You could see the high level potential and you could be inspired by the vision that some of those early folks had at Algorand. It took me a little while to dive into the technicalities, but, you know, understanding cryptographic sortition and ZK proofs and like what they really meant and why they were important and how they were going to be the underpinnings of everything. I mean, people forget like Silvio invented ZK proofs like back in the 80s, right?
So the 80s.
Mm-hmm. He won the Turing Award in 1980. Don't quote me on this, but it was like 86, I think. So, you know, and those are really what they were doing back then was the underpinnings of cryptography as we know it today. And obviously it's changed and evolved, but no, it was fun. It was really fun for me early on then, but it was a little bit of a crash course.
Do you have any recommendations for people who maybe want to take that crash course or follow in those footsteps?
Dive in. It's so much easier now than it used to be because there's so much more out there, right? Mm-hmm. That was the first thing that didn't, I mean, Algorand was one of the first things not with ties to it, not the only one, but no ties to Ethereum or Bitcoin or anything like that, right? It was really its own standalone thing. And there's nowhere else I'd rather be. And I'm so happy that I jumped in. And I think more and more people should. And I think more and more people will now that there's sort of a culture shift here in the US and the regime is kind of okay with crypto and decentralized technology and we're carefully stepping forward. I think it's a great place to be for sure.
So you're with Arlington Capital now. How did you go from Algorand to Arlington Capital?
Yeah, great question. So while I was at Algorand, we had a number of investors on the cap table there that were involved in the project. Michael Arrington was always super supportive, and he was, as an investor, he was there, and he was good for a call, favor, advice, feedback, introduction. And so I've had a relationship with him for years, and at some point, like, Algorand was in good hands, the foundation was in good hands, and it was sort of a good opportunity for Kelly's next chapter. Mm-hmm. And Mike offered that I come join the fund, and I get to support our founders and new investments that we make the same way that Mike did for us in the early days. And I truly love sort of passing on that baton of doing whatever we can, whether that's helping to connect the dots, hosting our founders retreat, having our founders doing business with each other. We do a lot of press and media support. Early stage companies don't invest super heavily in marketing. So being able to sort of pinch hit and support them there and provide some resources that they wouldn't otherwise have access to, I think is really important. So that's sort of the how and why from being the CMO at a large project to the other side now. And it's been great. I get to see a lot more. You know, when you're really focused on one project, it's almost like you forget to look up and see what else is around you. And we've already talked about Kelly's crash course and a 72-page white paper on math and economics. It wasn't like I had a lot of bandwidth and time to see what else was going on in the space. So through some lenses, you know, I've been in crypto since for only a few years because sort of the scope has broadened in terms of what I can see and what I get exposure to.
Do you miss the nitty-gritty, getting your hands into like one project though? Because sometimes you don't get to see all the details anymore.
I do. And I've got founders that will lean on me more than others, and I have no problem like diving in and helping out more. And it's, I usually give the caveat, like, I miss this. Yeah, like, tell me if I'm getting too annoying.
Right. Yeah. I know that. the podcast. Let's talk about the podcast. So I stumbled upon it. You didn't mention anything about the Pirate Pod in our initial call. I had to go find it myself. I went and listened to episode 15, because that was the most recent one on your website at the time.
I've upped it. They're almost all up there. I think there is not enough happening in this space where early stage founders are able to talk about what they're doing. Maybe, you know, and we hear it, we see it all the time. We get new deals and we look at new founders all the time. But I think broadly speaking, you know, the attention isn't given to them. Yeah. They don't get as much press and media coverage. They're not talked about as much on Twitter. They're not, you know, it's hard. They have a harder sort of path, but they're doing fascinating, interesting things. And that was one of the drives for me starting the podcast. All founders like focused on who we've invested on and invested in and their stories, how they got into crypto, what their paths have been, what industries they were in prior and why they're founding and building in the Web3 space right now. So I truly enjoy it. The Pirate Pod is based on Michael Arrington wrote a blog back in 2013 or 14 on being a pirate. I think it's still up there on TechCrunch if you search Michael Arrington on being a pirate. And it's all about sort of the mentality and the drive that founders have and why that's different. They're not necessarily in it for the, it's a lifestyle, sort of being a pirate and chasing and the fun of the chase.
I don't want to make you pick like a favorite child or anything, but is there an episode that stands out to you as like the thing that opened your eyes more so than, or I guess got you more excited about the future or anything like that?
Yeah, I love all my children equally, right? Our founders and my own real ones. I truly enjoy, you know what I hate is editing podcasts. I'm sure that you are much better at it than I am. So I like hate the mechanics of it, but the conversations that I get to have with founders, I actually really like, because I think a lot of times also founders are so focused on what they're doing. They'll go from up here like and hone right in on the technicalities really quickly. And I like to sort of step it through and ask some basic questions. And I think that's, you know, it helps me, it helps them, and it sort of hones the message. I think people need to hear more of that, you know, the basics of why you're doing something and what the impetus of that was. So I don't necessarily have a favorite podcast. Mm-hmm. I just like being able to, you know, have everyone on their toes and ask dumb questions and get down to basics and then sort of dive in a little bit more technical.
Okay. Last question about the podcast, then we can move on. But which side of the mic do you prefer to be on? Do you like to be asking the questions or being asked?
I actually like asking the questions.
Right?
Yeah.
It feels like you have a little bit more control over what's going on, right?
It's that, I'm not that interesting. I think what other people are building and doing are fascinating. Right?
I disagree.
Thank you. But you know what I mean? Some people, there are people that are really building stuff that will change how we function or how we interact with each other. And I think that's super cool to hear.
No, I love it. That's the Pirate Pod, and that's on your website too. I believe there's links on there. You guys have a YouTube?
Yep, it's on arringtoncapital.com, and then we do have a YouTube channel. If you want to watch the visuals, we are on Spotify and iTunes as well.
Nice.
And a bunch of the others, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk then about what you do with Arlington now then. So I was looking through the investments page where it kind of shows the list of companies you've invested in. Well, first of all, I was shocked to see LimeWire and Napster on there. I didn't know that those companies still existed.
Yep. LimeWire has actually pivoted. They're right now doing more of a file transfer situation that they've had some really strong traction with. Napster was recently acquired by a company doing a lot of immersive augmented AI experiences. So both of those have been interesting. Those are probably outliers in our overall lay of the land of portfolio companies. We've done a lot of infrastructure layer ones. I mean, the fund's been around for years and we've made probably over 300 investments at this point. So
Algorand was one of them too.
Years ago, a lot of layer ones, infrastructure, DeFi products, stable coins, developer enablement tools, less on the consumer side and a little less on DePIN, but there's a few in there.
What are the trends like now? What are the things that you're seeing pop up or the things that you guys are excited to invest in now in 2025?
Yeah, the early stage venture has been a little bit slower. Valuations have been a little higher. There's been some focus and attention put on these digital asset treasuries. And because we have both a liquid side of our business and a private venture, there's been a little emphasis on that, just given the opportunities that have presented themselves. So we've participated in a number of those. Our name's been on several of the pieces of news that have come out around some of that stuff. I think those are good. I think those are super interesting. And they give, I think everyone in crypto is very focused on everything in crypto and we forget about the big rest of the world
right
out there. You know, I'm married to TradFi, so I'm regularly reminded that there's a whole world that doesn't totally acknowledge us here. And so I think these things have been really good because they give people exposure to digital assets that they otherwise may have been prevented for whatever mandates, rules, et cetera, they have. And it's easier for them to buy a stock on the NASDAQ than it is to go get set up with some custodian and some exchange and purchase whatever digital asset and then hold it.
I think Grayscale getting the ETF, I think, really opened up the lot to everyday consumers.
Yeah. And then you have these MicroStrategy versions that are happening in other parts of the world and jurisdictions where it's not as easy to get access to digital assets. And then you have the MicroStrategies of other assets, whether that's Ethereum or SWI or baskets of currencies or whatever it might be.
Yeah. What about AI? Are you guys seeing adoptions of AI or new interesting ways to blend blockchain and AI together?
Yeah, there've been a few. We see a lot. We've seen a lot on that front. We haven't invested in everything, obviously. But there's a company called Giza that's doing really well. They've done a lot of they've done some autonomous agents. There's a couple other platforms that we've seen do similar things like that. But sort of these personalized agents that hold your wallet, store your crypto, take care of it, get the best yield, redeploy it. That gets really interesting because it takes a lot of the complexity off of some of this stuff, right?
Right.
So there's some decentralized inference happening. There's some really cool stuff at the intersection of AI and crypto. We've placed a few bets on that front. I think there's probably more to come. I think some of that's really early, but it'll start to get interesting very soon, especially when people can start using some of these things that have been built over the past 12 to 14 months.
Are there any of those investments starting to pay off or starting to
I think some are getting really strong adoption. And I think that's going to continue. Don't forget, we're only halfway through a year where we're really only 6 or 7 months into more of a crypto-friendly regulatory environment here in the U.S. and other parts. So I think, you know, that opens up a huge swath of opportunity for, you know, not only founders that are based in the U.S., but founders that aren't in the U.S. that want to do business within the U.S. So I think we'll see more of that in 2026 in terms of adoption and some of these autonomous agents that might be able to get yield for you, or how AI is implemented into crypto as people start to use it more and more.
How involved are you guys in trying to shape some of that regulatory landscape? Like, are you in conversations with people trying to like figure out what's going on with the rules and regulations? Like, is it a security? Is it a commodity? Is it a currency? Like those types of conversations?
That's a good question. We're supportive. Obviously, we pay a ton of attention to what's going on. I'm happy to, you know, we're happy to support DC Blockchain Week and a lot of educational initiatives that are happening down there. We are members at the Digital Chamber of Commerce and really respect all the work that Cody and the team are doing down there. You know, it's interesting. I remember it was January of 2019, I think. And we had gone down at Algorand. We did some education, and I had been down in Washington for 11 meetings across one day, and it was freezing and probably walked 2.5 miles, and it was insane. But the level of understanding was not great. And I don't think it's necessarily improved as much as it should have in that span of time. So I think there's a ton of work to be done. I think we can all be doing that work. It's, you know, it's interesting to watch it play out. I think some of the new laws and the new energy and attention on it are fantastic for everybody involved in the space.
Is there any politician that you can point to that's like, he knows what he's talking about? He understands crypto.
I mean, I live in Massachusetts, so I can tell you who doesn't.
I know.
I'm probably better at that.
You don't have to name those names.
I mean, it's a challenge, but it's good, you know?
Yeah,
We can all tell our families what we do, and it's not as frowned upon as it maybe once was.
Well, plus, there's only one way to go. You can only increase your knowledge when it's that low.
That's correct. I think the education part is important for sure.
Yes, 100%. So speaking of the education portion, then what are you guys planning on doing at Boston Blockchain? Do you know what your talk or your panels you're going to be part of?
I should probably have the answer to this. I don't. I know that there is a pitch fest, and I believe I'm judging or participating in that.
Oh, those are always fun.
I love them.
Yeah.
Love those. I had a call with someone yesterday who's sort of doing a conversation around go-to-market or digital assets and how they sort of expand and grow that I think I'm a part of. And then, we're excited to be supporting it out of Arrington Capital. And I think it's going to be larger and better this year, which is good. It's been on a little bit of a hiatus. You know, it was Pillar Ventures and myself at Algorand back in the day that did Boston Blockchain Week, and it was I forget the venue. It was sizable.
I have a feeling this year is probably going to be a little bit too big.
It does feel a lot bigger this year. I think it's been a little bit. I think it's been tough for the crew to pull it together the past 2 years, just based on everything else going on.
Right.
Again, back to politics and Massachusetts politics. I think that's added an extra layer of irritation, and I think you know, that's lifting, and I'm excited that they're bringing so many people in and we've got so much support in Boston here this year. You forget that Boston has had a ton between MIT and Harvard and Tufts, right, and some like legacy financial institutions. I know we talked about this before, but Abigail Johnson at Fidelity was letting people use Bitcoin to buy lunches dating back to 2014. Like, there's some great there's some really great history in Boston when it comes to crypto, and it's a shame that it's sort of fallen off, but I think, you know, there's a chance for it to come back for sure. I think New York and some of the large anchors in Asia continue to be big anchors, but I think Boston's an important role.
So one of the last things that we talked about that I want to kind of touch on today was the Celsius bankruptcy that happened back in 2023. Because you told me you were actually on the team that was bidding for the assets. You also told me that you saved all the people involved in that, 9 figures. Is that something you can talk about? Can we?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this was public back then. It wasn't me. There was a group of about five teams that came together. That there was a there was a bid existing for the assets, and we put together a group that came in with a competing bid. And just by having that competitiveness, because I don't think most people wanted to touch that from outside of crypto, because it was crypto back 2 years ago, right? And there was a lot of nuance around that. So we put together a group of crypto, there was a group that came together of crypto friendly folks from the industry and put in a competing bid, and just that competitive process significantly knocked down the fees that were set to be taken off, which is only better for all the creditors, right? So it meant that there was more money going back into the hands of distributors. The plan that we ended up putting together won approval from the creditors, I believe, and it was moving forward. And then there were some hiccups with the SEC. Keep in mind, this was, again, a different time when it comes to regulation in crypto, and it died on the vine a little bit and kind of dissolved. So I don't think it was a hugely successful outcome from a bankruptcy perspective for anyone that had been tied up in that. I know, you know, almost everyone knows someone that had been affected by that, either big or small. It's a shame. I think those things are hopefully behind us.
Hopefully. But I mean, if you got a settlement out of that, I think we could look to you and say thank you for making that just a little bit bigger.
It was not just us. There were a bunch of groups. There were five of us that came together. And it was good.
Well, I'm going to give you the credit because you're here. So, what other lessons do you think have been learned? Is there any takeaways that you guys had from that event? How have things changed maybe even since then? Do you think that's possible that we could have another Celsius or Three Arrows?
I think anything's possible. I think there's a lot more diligence and a lot more transparency and a lot of learnings that have come out of what has happened in the past. And I think with the U.S. paying more attention to having to put rules and regulation in place instead of enforcement actions will significantly shift that also.
All right. Anything else that you want to touch on or tell people about?
Oh, I think this is great. I'm excited that Boston Blockchain Week is coming back in a big way this year. I think there's a lot of excitement around that. I know that there's more founders. I think that the local university blockchain clubs have increased in size and participation. So I'm excited to see everything coming out of that. Excited for the Pitch Fest. Love the work that Ian and Cubic and the Boston DAO and Solana in Boston are all doing. So I think this fall is shaping up to be fabulous.
Yes. So if anybody has a company that they're starting up and they want to maybe talk to somebody about getting some investments for that, what recommendations would you give them? What advice would you give them?
That's a good question. I think, you know, the networking and community element of crypto is huge. I know, you know, the several times a year when we're at events where we're seeing people in person, whether that's East Denver or Singapore or wherever it might be, a lot of that is important. I think, you know, you are your network. And so making sure you're taking advantage of that and, you know, having I think just down to basics of having a really clear, compelling pitch for what you're doing and why you're doing it and how it's going to add value to the ecosystem for investors, for customers, et cetera, and having like your pitch really strong. We look at a lot of pitches. It's amazing to me how some of them are so far, far above others. So I think that all that's important.
So I guess what are the elements that make it a good pitch then? Is it technical? Is it like a good mix of like making it understandable for someone who's not technical?
Yeah, I think it's a good pitch. You have to keep in mind, like we're looking at many, many pitch decks every single day. We're talking to lots of founders every week, hundreds and hundreds a month, right? And so being able to get someone's attention and have it be in an interesting, compelling way. Like if it's something that's, could you do this with what exists today? And like, does this make it clunkier or better? Or does it fix the problem? Like what's even the problem here? Who's the team behind it that's doing it? What's driving you to do this? I think all of those things are important. And just having like a very, very crisp and clear narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I'm going to give you like a 30-second intro on me, do I need like a 10-minute intro on you and your background? Like, no, I can read that. We only have a half an hour. Like, walk me through what you're doing, right?
Right, right. You've got your pitch to complement the materials that they're handing you, maybe, is it?
To some degree, yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to be reading the materials you handed, because then one of you is probably redundant.
And just walk me through it, right? And just keep in mind, like, we're coming at a million miles an hour. Like, whatever problem you're solving for, I might not understand the problem as much as you think I do, right? So just make sure you level set with anyone you're pitching to.
I love that. That's I think that's great advice. Looking forward to the pitch competition. I'm hoping I don't have to do a recording while that's going on, because I love sitting in on those.
They're good. It's really hard to pitch how you're trying to change the world in 5 minutes or less or whatever it might be.
What's fascinating to me is why, because you can see that some of these guys, it's like the first time I think they've ever had an opportunity to do a pitch. So it's like you're getting to watch them like learn, like, oh, you're going to see now what's going to work and what's not going to work. And this is fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's wild. It's great. And, you know, kudos. I think the other thing, you know, we're talking about early stage investments, like the best thing you can do is just keep rinsing and repeating and changing it and making it new, like just over and over. I tell even our founders this, you know, because there's a lot of founder-led marketing. And I tell our founders, like, you'll get sick of repeating what you're doing, but what you're doing is fabulous. You just need to just repeat, like remind everyone how it's great and what it is that you're doing.
Yeah. And then you jump on the pirate pod so you can tell the world about it. And then you get more practice that way too.
I'll have you on next time, Kyle.
Kelly, thank you so much for your time today. I'm looking forward to catching your presentations at Boston Blockchain. I hope we get to meet up all in there.
Great. Thanks, Kyle, for having me. Appreciate it. See you soon.
Huge thanks to Kelly Callahan for breaking down the crypto grind and hyping us up for Boston Blockchain Week. Head to arringtoncapital.com to explore Arrington Capital's work. Keep up with them at Arrington Capital on Twitter or their YouTube channel. And don't miss Boston Blockchain Week this September and snag your tickets at bostonblockchainweek.com for the full experience, the talks, the networking, and that unbelievable Boston vibe. Follow the show, share it with your crypto crew, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
Produced by China Shop Productions.